Welcome to the Cloud and Clear series, in which we invite leading technologists and subject matter experts at the cutting edge of multi-cloud solutions to probe key issues and trends. Each of our episodes have a music theme, and as this is our first Cloud and Clear podcast, this is entitled Tuning In. My name is Des O'Connor, and I'm the Cloud Intelligence Lead at Dell Technologies UK. In this episode, we'll be looking at what is required to deliver a cloud operating model that's capable of meeting the demands of today's digital business. We met with our guest speakers the other day on our briefing call. We talked about some of the content that we were going to cover off in this podcast. And one of the key things that I took away from that briefing call and what we're going to cover off today is that cloud is a journey and not a destination, and that all operating models need to consider people, process, technology, and the ecosystem. So today, I've got the pleasure of having Richard Flux from Equinix and Jonathan Kaminga from Dell Technologies. Before I hand over to Richard for introductions, I guess just to talk about Equinix a little bit. So I discovered Equinix through Richard a couple of years ago, and it is one of the best kept secrets. And for those of you that don't know who Equinix is or what they do, top three key facts that I find fascinating are: over 90% of all internet routes pass through Equinix data centers. The second one is, Equinix is the world's largest provider of carrier-neutral data center services. And the third one, which really is close to my heart, is all about sustainability. And so Equinix is a member of the Green Grids, a global consortium dedicated to advancing energy efficiency in data centers and business computing systems. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Richard for a Twitter-style introduction, meaning 140 characters or less, and give us a brief overview of Equinix.
Oh, thank you, Des, and thank you so much for having me on. It's a lovely intro, and those were three great facts about Equinix. So my name is Richard Flux. I'm an Alliance Development Manager here at Equinix, and I've been at Equinix for around about 6 years. Before that, about 11 years in total in the technology industry, but previously I was in finance. And yes, I really, really enjoy working with Equinix. So we are not a small company, but not a company that lots of people know. So we have around over 240 sites around the world. And it's a great company to be part of. And I also get to work with you guys as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great working with you, Richard. And I was glad to hear that you did say that you really enjoyed working with Dell Technologies, because I believe that we do have a very strong partnership together. Yes. And before I hand over to Jonathan, because this is a Cloud and Clear podcast with a music theme, what is your favorite band?
Ooh, a deep probing question there. My favorite band is Massive Attack. However, if you have a look at my Spotify history, you'll find for the last couple of years, Baby Shark and the Invertebrate song have been played on repeat, which I must admit does prove interesting for commutes when I start doing a shuffle playlist on my Spotify. Of course, any other music services are available, but I can thank my my young children for that one.
Oh, that's good. That must mess up your Discover Weekly. And we've also got the pleasure of Jonathan Kaminga from Dell Technologies. So it would be great to get an introduction from yourself, Jonathan, but also, could you tell our listeners something that they may not know about Dell Technologies?
Oh, okay. All right, Des. So I'm Jonathan Kaminga. I'm a principal in Dell's consulting business, and I look after customer strategic transformation projects. So what people might not know is that Dell does have a consulting practice that will help customers understand their strategic transformation journeys, and whether it's IT, digital, or workforce transformation, we can help them.
And I love that, because when I came for my interview 4 years ago, I remember having my interview with Dane Turbutt, who's a senior vice president for the UK. And he talked to me through Dell Technologies, and I obviously had prepared for the interview, but I didn't know the breadth and the depth of what we actually do. And as he described it in the interview, he said Dell Technologies can often be referred to like as a Pandora's box. If a customer asks a question whether or not we could do X, Y, or Z, the answer is often yes, because if you don't know a person, one of the team members that you will be working with will know someone who knows someone who knows someone who can help with our customer query. And that's what I love about getting up and working with Dell Technologies every day, is that opportunity and the breadth and depth of our portfolio. So before we get into it, I do have one last question for you, Jonathan. This is just to get to know you a little bit better. And I am obviously going to judge you based on your results. But as we have the music theme, I'm going to also ask you, what is your favorite band?
Right. So I would say I've got quite a broad group of bands that I like. You know, I like Muse, I like Elbow, people like that. Morcheeba, I think it's great.
Nice.
A great holiday group. But I will pick what I grew up with, and that was Pink Floyd.
Yes, that is a very good choice.
On my Spotify, that's amazing. Though, my Spotify is actually run by my wife. She's the DJ in the house, and I can't pronounce half the things she's got there. So.
Well, I'm sure it beats the interpretive song. I can definitely guarantee that.
Probably, I wouldn't know.
Amazing. So I'm going to start off by asking Jonathan the first question. So how do organizations go about setting up a cloud operating model? You can't just drop it into a business. So what's your advice to customers, Jonathan?
Well, no, you're right. I don't think you can just drop it in, because there's obviously a whole environment there already. And, you know, we call it legacy, potentially. And, you know, unless you've got a very good handle of what your operating model is currently and what that current legacy environment looks like, what the applications are doing and the criticality of those applications, it's very difficult then to look forward to how that's going to go in the cloud. Yes, you can adopt a cloud-first approach where anything new can go in the cloud, or very specific services, SaaS-type products, you can adopt them. But in terms of a cloud operating model, it really is about the people and processes that exist currently. And also, are you going to want to adopt a sustainable cloud operating model? And you might want to be looking at your current processes and understand where the wastage exists today, and you don't want to be really carrying that through into your future cloud operating model.
I guess the question to both of you there is really, we hear these words, hybrid cloud, multi-cloud, cloud first, private cloud. Why has this actually developed within industries, and why are customers now facing the challenges around operating models?
From my perspective, a lot of organizations don't realize that there's probably a lot of engagement required with the business now in order to understand where the maturity are and going towards a cloud model. So in order to get to the cloud, you might want to consider going halfway to the cloud, like in develop your own private cloud that can reach into the public cloud in the future. So you're using it as a stepping stone, and it enables your maturity, accelerates your maturity as well, by having this, what would now be known as a hybrid multi-cloud type platform, because you are exiting out of your legacy, going into a much more clearly defined cloud model that's on-prem, but has the ability to go into the cloud as well.
And I think that's a lot of the challenges that our customers have faced, right? That they deployed a cloud-first strategy because it was quick, it was agile, and it was simple. And there was a very big move away from traditional data centers on their premise with legacy elements of being managed, security updates, etc. So a lot of customers moved to public cloud or even to a private cloud. But what organizations are facing today is a complex cloud environment where there's been different strategies deployed over a number of years, which has led to a operating model that may not have been as efficient as to when they initially saw the premise of what cloud actually offered. So I guess, Richard, I'm going to hand over to you to get your views and perspectives as well.
Well, thank you, Des. I think sometimes we get so caught up in the labels of cloud, we move away what we're trying to solve. It's really outcomes that we should be based on. It's what we're looking is the strategy of the business in general. It depends if it may involve lots of different things, whether it not be hybrid or pure cloud or certain applications sitting in places. And I think we need to sometimes step back, and as cloud is constantly changes, we need to never lose track of what we're trying to achieve as a business or as individuals, for the employees or for the customers, and bringing it together to what's actually most effective for that business now and going forward, and not being stuck in the past in some of the decisions that maybe were made initially.
And what are the kind of common pitfalls that you're seeing within the industries, Richard? Because obviously you work with a multitude of customers within an Equinix space. Where is your thoughts and perceptions?
Well, this is part of the reason I so enjoy working for Equinix, is that we get to see a very unique perspective, because Equinix has about 60% of all on-ramps going into the cloud due to being us part of a carrier-neutral facility and facilitating those links. We get to see some very interesting things. And also, I wasn't always alliances. I looked after major financial institutions for a couple of years with Equinix previously. And when we have our conversations with customers, it's about making sure it's a collaborative approach from the organization rather than just from a leadership point of view, because, of course, it takes the entire body of the organization to understand where they're going. And I think when you start with plan A, be prepared to shoot up the letters of the alphabet, because things change. Certainly when you're taking on a transformation strategy to evolve the cloud, what you knew yesterday isn't the same as today and tomorrow. So I think the organizations really need to prepare to embrace that change, because, of course, it is constantly evolving. And not all clouds are created equal, and not all businesses are the same. So what might work for one company might not work for another. And applications in the cloud or services can change over time, and new ones can appear as well. So really being flexible. And I think the businesses that aren't flexible or aren't being a collaborative approach can find it quite a challenge to transform. I think that's a good way of us kind of viewing some of those pitfalls.
I'm definitely going to steal that element, shooting up the alphabet, right? Starting with plan A and ending up with Z. But I do agree, right, that that's the whole element around cloud, is that agility and that concept of continual innovation and continual learning.
Yeah.
I suppose also that highlights, you know, shooting up the alphabet highlights the fact that this is a journey and not a destination. And you've always got to iterate to improve. And certainly if you're going to try to develop a sustainable model in the cloud, you know, you need to be very clear about the standards that you have around development and around the different templates that you're going to use. There is a lot of information out there about wastage in the cloud at the moment. And the reason is people haven't clearly defined the operating model and the requirements of the application up front. And so you're effectively transferring your wastage from on-prem into the cloud. And to what Richard said about understanding your data now, it's understanding what supports that data, who's using that data on-prem today, and the value of that data. And if you don't, and you just transfer that into the cloud, then really you'll end up in a bimodal way of operating, which will potentially double your costs. You need to be able to operate in the same way on-prem as you would do in the cloud. And that is an iterative effect. That you're not going to be able to do that overnight.
Well, I love that key phrase that you've just said earlier on again, iterate to accelerate. I think that's really, really important. I think, you know, Jonathan, coming back to you, right, if I was a customer and I was listening to this and I was like, I've got multi-cloud environment, et cetera, et cetera, what would be the kind of top tips that you would give them to say, these are quick wins of how you can kind of start to look at an operating model and start to iron out some of those challenges that they may be facing?
Well, what I see is that there is a clear divide between the people who manage the infrastructure and the people who run the application teams. And so you've got the business on one side and IT on the other, in effect. And what I try and encourage my infrastructure teams to look at is to not focus so much on the infrastructure, but look at the application. The application is the strategy. You've got to turn it on its head. Application becomes your strategy. And if you can do that, and you can really understand the linkages between the application and the infrastructure, then you've got a much better chance of being able to move into a cloud operating model or de-risk your move into a cloud operating model, whether it be on-prem or in a colo. Which is something that I'm seeing more and more nowadays, is organizations saying that they don't want to be owning their own data centers anymore. They want to develop their operating model in a colo because, you know, they want that more sustainable approach. I mean, you go to professionals like Equinix, you're much guaranteed to have a more sustainable model than you would do if it was in-office, on-prem type data center. So it's by understanding the application and where that application needs to sit and the criticality of that application. Once you get there, you understand all that, then you can start building an operating model around it.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Jonathan. So I just wanted to switch up the gears a little and get Equinix's perspective. So how can Equinix help customers develop their cloud operating model, Richard?
Oh, I love that question, Jez. We spoke about it previously. I think we all see things in a very unique way, depending on our perspective. Equinix, of course, we have a large amount of the on-ramps going into the public cloud. So we really talk to our customers and understanding what outcomes they're looking to achieve, which clouds they're looking to connect to. What's the things that really affect them? Is it latency? Is it privacy? Is it the flexibility of connections to being able to add or take them away on short notice? And then if we look at Jonathan's team and Dell, that they have a really rich understanding of the different technologies that are available and how they're utilizing them. But when we combine them together, so Dell, Equinix, and the customer in the center of that, we get such a wealth of knowledge that allows us to guide it. And it is a journey, as we've said a couple of different times. But I also think you can kind of put the analogy of it almost being about looking for a house. You know, it's about location, about where you want to be. But it's also about like the negotiables and the non-negotiables. So, you know, in the terms of cloud, it's about data sovereignty or latency or having data in one location being accessed by an application in other locations. And what does that entail about where you are or what you do? So, yeah, I think I quite like that analogy. It's all about almost about buying a house and those non-negotiables and non-negotiables.
That's brilliant, Richard. I think I can resonate quite well with that house analogy. You know, there are the negotiables and non-negotiables. And maybe you and I are the new Kirsty and Phil from location, location, location for the cloud world. And I think, you know, actually, when you were discussing that negotiables and non-negotiables, and then I thought about that one of my favorite programs, which is Location, 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 if Kirsty and Phil are listening, holla. That Location, Location, Location is really important because people need to know where their data is stored. They need to have instant access. They also want to make sure that at the location that the data is stored, that it is secure. Obviously, there's a higher demand from us as consumers on data. We are a data-driven society. Data has grown exponentially over the X amount of years that we've had phones, Amazon Alexas, Google Homes, et cetera, et cetera. And those elements have created organizations to generate more innovation, but also as part of that innovation, data is being processed, and then it needs a subsequent home for that to be stored. And I think cloud was seen and is still seen as a way of storing data efficiently, and having that instant access always on facility is really, really important. And I guess we've talked about the ecosystem and the power of two and three. And at the start of the podcast, we introduced how important an operating model is to many organizations and that they need to consider people, process, technology, and the ecosystem. I feel that we've kind of, during our conversation, we've talked already a lot about our ecosystem and the importance to that. We've indicated the importance of aligning the business with IT and knowing the outcomes and making sure that everyone is on the same journey as they continue their destination towards cloud. But I guess the element that I'd like to talk to now is around the process. So, Jonathan, I'd love to get your insight around the process of what we actually do with customers to help them.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Thanks for that, Des. And, you know, we have a process within Dell. We've been using it for around 12 years now. We call it As Is To Be. And it's actually a really collaborative, we mentioned that word already, a collaborative approach to understanding what our customers look like now. How are they delivering a service back to the business now? And that could be across all data centers or just one data center or one business unit, whatever it might be, where that we're focused on. And we gather around us all the key people within the customer who've got a vested interest in the future. And we interview them one-on-one. So it's a very safe place for them to come to us and tell us all the problems that they face today. And that's really important to understand those problems because they form the key barriers for transformation. We need to be able to overcome those problems before we make any decision to move forward. And once we have a very big picture of the organization, and again, that's something that most organizations don't have. They don't have that single place to go to say, what do we look like today? And once we've created that, we can then show everybody within that team what all the issues are across the whole business, and get them to fully understand where those key barriers are. Once everybody understands that, we can start forming a vision of the future. And that's a collaborative approach. We need to gain consensus. Everybody understands their place in the future. And so it's a bit like if you had a magic wand, what would good look like in 12, 24 months' time? And we build that vision out together with the customer, and that will more than likely be some kind of hybrid multi-cloud type platform. Around that, we can understand what the operating model looks like today and what it will look like into the future as well. And then that is the iterative approach. That's your A plus all the alphabet iterative approach. And we will then build with the customer a transformation roadmap that breaks down that whole process into bite-sized chunks, easily digestible by the whole business. And everybody then can see what that journey looks like to get them to that future to be. And if the customer wants, we can also build a business case that will underpin that transformation roadmap and that future vision. That's our process. It's being used on global organizations. It's being used on small organizations, but it will work whatever the type of transformation that we are working on.
So basically what I've heard here is that you are Dell Services team are the Hogwarts, and that you're now called Harry Potter. That's what I'm going to start calling you from now on.
This is the magic.
Yeah. With your magic wand. So I think that's, I have looked at one of your as is and to be documentations, and it is phenomenal. And I know our service team and the broad ecosystem get very excited, because it really it gives people alignment on the process, and it outlines the people element of how you can get to that future vision. And I think I prefer that as your as is and to be, or it may be known in another organization as your current state, future state. Yeah. But that complex element, really, it's an architecture plan, right? So again, going back to that house analogy, you can't build an extension or a house without the foundations and having your builder on board, because everything will just fall apart. So I, in my mind, in my simplistic Des ways, I would say that the as is and to be is your foundations to build that solid wall and the steels and the infrastructure to take you onto something great and wonderful.
Yeah, and just to sort of underline all of that, really, the ethos that sits behind the as is to be model is actually loosely based on a traditional change model that was developed back in the 80s by Burkhard Harris. And they realized that you couldn't affect real change in an organization without ensuring that you get that consensus. And so they've got this formula that says you've got a group of dissatisfied senior leaders, not satisfied with the current situation. Together, they build a shared vision, and then they build a plan to execute against that shared vision. And those three things together will be greater than the resistance that you'll face internally by the people. The thing is, people resist change. It's only natural. If they're not part of the process, they will wonder what's going on. And it, by this whole process avoids what we call the marathon effect, where you've got the senior leaders at the top. They all know what's happening, and the starter gun goes off, and then the people right at the back, they don't even hear the starter gun. So they don't know what's going on. They've not been consulted. They've not even been asked about what current issues they have. So the whole process cuts through all that, breaks down all those barriers to transformation, and gets us on rapidly on that path to transformation.
That's amazing. I think that we've covered off each of those four elements, and I have definitely learned a lot today, and it's always a pleasure to be here with you guys. I guess to Richard, there's kind of two things I want to ask you. One, kind of what's your key takeaway from our conversation today? And two, what are you most excited about for cloud in the future?
Oh, lovely question. So my one takeaway would be it's about being prepared for the unexpected, because like every journey, something changes and you have to adapt. When you're moving along in your digital transformation or cloud transformation strategy, it's not done in isolation. It's not something where you stop your business, you transform and then restart your business. You're having to do this in parallel by providing services for your customers or for your employees. Business is operating as usual and still growing and adapting to those business challenges, while also simultaneously running into a brand new way of operating, which of course yields different results and different positives that you have. But my one piece would make sure you're doing it from the right location. You know, go back to the housing analogy, giving yourself the best chance of success. So that needs to be looked at and as a collaborative point of view. Like when we look at an on-prem and an office somewhere that's not purpose-built for the connectivity you want to go, you're not giving yourself the best chance to take advantage of what the market has to offer. And I think it's understanding and utilizing the knowledge, the collective knowledge of those that have already started on this journey. And that's what you can bring together. And like many, many all these organizations are going on this journey. Some were born in the cloud, then they had to adapt and come out slightly and then make the most of what is being available. But everyone has different stories. And I really think when we start comparing these stories and we look at what kind of the running theme is here, it's about adaptability. And always the ones that have adapted the most are the ones that have got the most amount of success. And finally, what I'm excited about the cloud for the future is about what it offers to the end customers, the ability for it to be flexible. And I think the bounds of it are endless. It just adds more choice and more flexibility to the services on offer, using the best of all components that we have, whether it be on-prem, hybrid, or even cloud.
Amazing. I love that. And over to you, Harry Potter. I mean, sorry, Jonathan. What would your key takeaway be? And what are you most excited about for the cloud?
Well, I think the cloud offers great opportunities for all organizations for the right application, for the right business need. And I do see great plans that customers have to go into the cloud that really, in all intents and purposes, have failed. And they've failed because they've not had a good handle on current operations, and they've not really clearly defined what that future is to look like. So my advice is to get a very good handle on your current vision and then break that down into size chunks and be very collaborative with the rest of your team and keep that communication going, and also realize that once you have a cloud operating model, that's not the end of the story. You will continue to iterate.
And I guess, you know, from my closing remarks as well, there's two things that I'm going to have as a key takeaway. You know, having a plan A and then shooting through the alphabet, I think that's really important. And it goes back to basically both of your points. And then the other key thing that I am going to use in customer conversations is the iterate to accelerate. I think there are two key things that I've taken away today. And it's been a pleasure having this conversation with you. I've learned stuff. I've had really good fun in the process with it, and it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to continuing our relationships with Equinix. I think you guys are amazing, and Richard, you know, I'm a big fan of yours, and the amazing work that we do together is amazing. And Jonathan, it's been great today having the conversation and learning a little bit more around our services from a Dell Technologies perspective. So thank you both. In the next episode, we're going to be examining how the right cloud architecture can help you reduce your costs and amplify your revenue. So stay tuned for that. And thanks again for listening to our Cloud and Clear podcast.